1208, this is WGN. John Williams here. We cannot do on the show today what Orion Samuelson preaches, and that is only look at the market twice a year. We will look at it throughout the hour. The Dow is off approximately 1,400 points right now, and it's continuing, as Orion told you seconds ago, to go down. So let's talk a little bit about what's happening this afternoon. Mark Hamrick joins us, Washington Bureau Chief and Senior Economic Analyst at Bankrate.com. Mark, you're back on WGN. How are you today?
Always a pleasure, John. Thanks for having me.
What's going on?
Well, John, I will preface this by saying that very often those of us who discuss these things on an ongoing basis, and we're grateful for the opportunity to do that, are sometimes put in the position of being asked to describe something that is happening as if it is rational. and that was the challenge in watching the stock market march up, with the NASDAQ composite notching a new record high, and obviously the other major averages and the stocks that comprise those averages moving up sharply as well. And I would argue that today's move down is just as irrational, but that doesn't mean it's not happening. So to your colleague's point that we ought to take all this with a grain of salt, I think that is appropriate, because most of us who are investing in the market are doing so for the sake of retirement, and even those who are approaching retirement, even in, let's say, a few years, will need that retirement savings many, many years down the road, because the hope, indeed the prayer, is they live many years beyond their own retirement. So, the most commonly asked question of me up until today, whether it was friends or the people in the media, news media, was what do I think is happening in the stock market? And the answer was, well, you know, we've had trillions of dollars of effectively stimulus thrown at the market, and so this is cash looking to find a home. Today, some of that cash is looking for a little less risk. The reasons that are being cited most commonly are because of the fact that we now have nearly half the states reporting a rise in COVID-19 cases, and I think the somewhat less credible explanation associated with Chairman Powell's characterization of the economy yesterday, which I thought was pretty much on the mark, and anyone who was shocked by that I don't think has been paying much attention.
I've had two people, one on the air, one off the air, tell me this week that if something happens like is happening right now, and like you said, maybe it's not all that rational, maybe it's temporary, but there's 1,400 off the Dow. And they said this might be the time, though, to just capture a little profit or at least park it in some place. It's not like you're going to spend that money, but put it in a place that's more conservative, even cash, just to sort of protect it, because without trying to be a market timer, you do think it's going to go down. Whatever's brought it up, it's probably right. Going to go down. And I wonder if some of that is what is happening here as well.
It may well be. A lot of it also is not humans. It's a lot of it is algorithmically driven. And we don't even know what triggers those algos, collectively speaking, because we're talking about a massive number of different influences. You know, I suppose you could take the approach that no one ever lost money taking a profit. The question is, what is the lost opportunity for future profits or gains in the market, particularly when we're talking about long-term investments?
So interest rates are another interesting part of what's happening out there. What's the upside to that? Isn't that encouraging to people that are looking to buy or borrow?
Well, this is a way that the Federal Reserve is trying to, let's say, inflate the economy. And even so, in so doing, isn't having any expectations for actual inflation, at least broadly measured, anytime soon. So absolutely, you know, this week we're seeing a record low mortgage interest rates. And one of the best performing aspects of an otherwise struggling economy is indeed the housing market. And so for those who are well qualified, whether it is to buy a home or to borrow to buy a car, obviously, to utilize any other kind of borrowing, this is a tremendous opportunity. And we are reminded that even with elevated unemployment, perhaps it goes without saying, but I'm going to say it anyway, the majority of Americans are still employed, and therefore they are likely functioning as well as they were before with respect to being consumers. But having said that, we're not going to overlook the fact that as of this morning's unemployment claims reports between the pandemic program and the overall program. We're talking about 29 million people continuing to have unemployment assistance, and that roughly aligns with what we heard last week with the monthly employment report. So that is certainly, as you know, well elevated above what we saw in the financial crisis and Great Recession, and we believe that we're in the mid-teens on an overall unemployment rate.
Mortgage rates, I'm quoting from Bankrate.com. This is you guys. Mortgage rates reached a new all-time low this week. The benchmark 30-year fixed rate dipped to 3.44, a new record. You guys point out a 15-year fixed rate mortgage fell to 2.8 from 2.83. If you can, that's just those are once in a lifetime numbers, aren't they?
Well, they are. You know, we've lived in an era of low interest rates for a better part of a decade, and thank you for citing that. And that's part of our regular weekly mortgage rate roundup that people can always check. And that's why we came into existence, was to provide insight on rates where previously essentially you had to go march to the bank in the pre-internet era. So, and the other part of that is, John, and this is probably as important a point as I would make that's aligned with what we do at Bankrate, is that even with those averages, one can always do better than those averages because it is indeed an average, right? So that is just sort of the midpoint of the survey that we do. There are some rates are higher, some rates are lower, and if you want to go shorter on duration, you could do that too.
Yeah, 3.44 is the average. How about that? Fascinating stuff, Mark. Thank you for your time today. Mark Hamrick, Washington Bureau Chief, Senior Economic Analyst, Bankrate.com. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
Ian Schur, back on WGN Radio once again from CNET, where he is an editor-at-large. Hi, Ian. Welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you doing?
Really good. A lot of ground to plow. You ready to roll?
As much as I can.
Well, so, you know, we were just talking before the news about how seismic the shift throughout all aspects of our culture seems to be post-George Floyd. I'm reading now that Yelp will add a new tool to search for black-owned businesses. Perhaps this is tied to that, maybe not. Can you expand a little on that?
It's absolutely tied to that. So over the last couple of weeks, Yelp has reported seeing a 25x increase in the frequency of searches for black-owned businesses. And they realized that that is a feature they don't really have. You know, if people want to be able to help specific businesses, specifically around politically charged times such as these, why not help them? And so there's this tool they've created where you can self-identify as a black-owned business. So it's kind of on the honor system here. But, you know, the people who are able to claim their business listing on Yelp, you then self-identify, and then people who want to search for you, they're able to do that. And I'm really curious to see where it goes. Yelp already has started a collection of black-owned businesses. We have a list to it on CNET, of course. And I'm curious to see whether or not they're going to start expanding this over time. For example, here in Washington, D.C., where I am, there's a lot of talk about minority and women-owned businesses. So I'm curious to see if they're going to start pushing in that, you know, in a broader direction as well. But certainly during these times, there's a lot of talk about helping the black community and supporting them extra amounts than we normally do. And this is a very interesting way to be able to do that.
Amazon has a Black Lives Matter banner on their website. How's that working out for them?
I think that it's working out for them the same it's working out for a lot of companies. You know, this has been rather extraordinary time seeing a bunch of companies come out and really just decide that politics is not what they're going to debate anymore. They're going to take a stand on what they argue is a human rights issue. And by supporting Black Lives Matter, you see that Amazon has it as a big banner on their website. And Jeff Bezos, the CEO of Amazon, has gotten a number of angry emails, and instead of just pushing delete like a lot of us do, he decided instead to put some of them on Instagram and to actually expose these people without their names, but just simply showing what they wrote. And some of them are really pretty terrible. We have a list, you know, link to them on CNET if you want to read them. But I think it's most telling that at the bottom of them, when Bezos reads it and this person says, "I'm never going to order from Amazon again," Bezos' response is, "Dave, you're the kind of customer I'm happy to lose." So it's that kind of thing, I think, is these companies are really willing to push hard on these issues now.
What's happening over at Facebook then?
Well, Facebook is going through its own kind of issues. So, you know, every one of the major tech companies at this point has donated a certain amount of money to racial issues organizations. They've pledged to make things better, even though most of Silicon Valley is run by white men, and they have huge diversity issues throughout all of their companies. But at Facebook in particular, there's an extra problem, which is that social media companies have kind of become this central focal point of the 2020 election, and really a lot of frustration over the tweets and messages that Donald Trump, the president, puts out. You may remember, most notably, in the last couple of weeks, President Trump put out a tweet that said, if the looting shoots, the shooting starts, or sorry, the looting starts, the shooting starts, which was a reference to supporting police beating protesters and looters. And one of the things that I think was really interesting is that Twitter decided to pull that tweet down and hide it behind a little message saying, this violates our rules. If you want to read it, you can click to read through, but we're not going to have this easily accessible on our website. Facebook has decided not to do that, and Mark Zuckerberg's getting a ton of pushback from his employees, and now even some of the researchers that he helps to fund through his philanthropic organization, they have started speaking up, which is very unusual as well.
We've talked about that scenario, maybe with you, maybe with some of our other guests, and the president said he wasn't advocating for shooting. He was describing what happens when looting starts, and it appeared as though Facebook bought that. But talk to me a little bit about what's happening. I'm not sure if this is Facebook or on all social media platforms. The Trump team came up with an ad or a video, and that's getting pulled from sites as well. And yet it references George Floyd and is trying to embrace peace and inclusivity. What went wrong?
Yeah, the biggest problem was that this is something that the Trump team has run across many times, is that they actually violated a copyright. So they used music that they didn't have the right to use. If you look through history, there's actually a number of times politicians on both sides have gotten criticism from musicians for using their music without asking for permission, usually during campaign rallies. But with President Trump in particular, he's tweeted out and retweeted a lot of videos that the White House or his supporters create that use music from, for example, the Batman series by Christopher Nolan, or they use an image that looks very much like it came from Game of Thrones. And in both cases, there was a push over, well, wait a minute, are you stealing someone else's intellectual property to make a political statement? And so it was a very standard issue. These companies, all of the social media companies, have a system for if the copyright order holder wants that thing brought down, they are allowed to fill out a form. It's perfectly by the law, and they can pull it down. And that's what's happened in this case. It happens thousands of times a day. And President Trump could have easily avoided it by not violating that copyright.
How do you do that? Do you then call the artist and say, hey, we want to use your song, is that okay? Or we want to use a clip from your movie or whatever?
Yeah, so, you know, as personally as someone in the media, I've learned how this stuff works, and it's very similar to how it is for you guys in radio. You know, there's a lot of systems you can pay for that allow you to have kind of broad access to a whole library of music to use as you want to for commercial purposes, and that is what happens there. When it comes to some music that you want to use that isn't in those libraries, yes, then you have to go to the rights holder and say, hey, can I have the right to use this thing? They'll say yes or no. That's their choice. It's their music. And if they say yes, they may say, well, give me some money and I'll allow you to do it. And that's typically how this stuff works out.
Ian Schur is on the line, editor-at-large, CNET.com. Talk to me about Apple. And has Apple generated an app that is supposed to help me diagnose whether or not I have COVID-19?
Yeah, they actually generated it a long time ago. So what they did is they created this on their website by the way, a lot of tech companies have this. Facebook has one. All of them seem to have some version of this that they worked with the CDC on early on to help people identify whether they have COVID-19. And in fact, if you go to the CDC's website and you try that thing, they have a system over there that was built with Microsoft. So Apple's thing has a new feature that they added on since they first launched this thing back in March, I think it was, where now you can actually put in information like your age, your pre-existing health conditions, your potential exposure risks, and the state you live in. And Apple says that what they will do is that they will completely anonymize all that information and then send it to the CDC to help them to identify where there may be flare-ups in your area, or if there are certain people with certain health conditions who are more likely to get it. It underscores to me how little we actually know about the coronavirus, even though we've been studying it and we've sequenced its genome and all of this stuff. There's a lot we don't know. And I think what's interesting is the tech industry, at least in some ways, is trying to step up and help us with figuring it out.
Well, if I give Apple that information, what do they give me? Do they tell me if I have the virus or not?
What they will do, if you are someone who potentially has it, is that they will recommend that you social distance, obviously, and that you isolate yourself, and they will recommend you go to a doctor. And that's actually what happened with me when I was I got sick, and I went through the CDC's tool, so I used the Microsoft thing, and that's exactly what it told me. It said, you know, call your doctor, call a urgent care clinic, you should go in and get tested, and that's exactly what happened.
I'm sorry, do you care to share with us the results of that?
Yeah, so it's actually really frustrating. So I was isolated for 2 weeks away from my family in our basement, and I had all the classic symptoms. They clinically diagnosed me at the doctor's office, and it took 2 weeks for my test to come back. And when it did, the nurse got on the phone with me, and she said, okay, I want to start by telling you that 40% of the tests are wrong, so you can't trust if it says you're negative. And I'm like, okay. And she said, you came back negative, but we think you were still positive. So you don't want to act like you had it and think that you're safe, but you likely did.
Stay in the basement. How long ago?
In the basement.
It appears as though the tests are better now and quicker now. How long ago did all of that happen to you?
It happened to me in late April. And for the most part, as I understand it, the tests are quicker, but they are not more accurate still. It depends on which test you get. There's a bunch of different ones. And then, I don't know if you're aware, this is just my own research, the antibody tests, there's not a single one that the FDA has cleared yet. So people can go get antibody tests, but they're not actually reliable, which is underscores, I think, back to what our original point here was, you know, all of these companies are trying to help the CDC figure out a lot of the details of this virus because we really just haven't gotten our arms around it yet.
Ian, I want you to answer this question next time we visit. We got a new iPad at my house, and as I'm filling as I'm enabling it and adding apps, a lot of times questions pop up, and it says this app wants access to your personal information. You know,
right.
and they promise that nothing bad's going to happen, but it'll help. It'll help the developers, and it's good to know where you are, if it's shopping or weather or whatever. And I'm inclined to say, yes, you can use my information. Yes or no? Am I making a mistake there?
It depends on the app you're using. I mean, if you can trust that company, then absolutely, if you're comfortable with it, you should.
Okay.
But there are instances where unscrupulous companies who are kind of fly-by-night or run by company people you can't trust, where they do misuse that information, and that's where it's problematic.
That was a yes or no question, Ian.
Sorry.
No.
Easy, right?
next time you and I are going to talk more about that, okay?
Absolutely.
Ian Schur, editor-at-large, CNET. 12:34, and you are listening to the Wind Trust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. Pete Zimmerman is our producer. Steve Bertrand has another Wind Trust Business Minute for you in moments, and we'll continue to follow the markets as they continue to move down steadily right now on the Dow off about 1,400 points. We've been taking some time on the Wintrust Business Lunch since, say, COVID-19 hit to talk to local businesses about how they are doing these days. Today we go out to Countryside. The president and CEO of NYCO is Bob Stahursky. Bob, you're on WGN Radio. How are you today?
Hi, John. How are you today?
Really good. You guys are out in Countryside, right?
Yes, we are.
And you guys are in the cleaning, the chemical business. Is that right?
Right. We're in the manufacturing and packaging of specialty chemicals for primarily institutional and industrial use.
So who would be a customer for you guys?
Janitorial distributors, large food service distributors, maintenance and repair operation distributors, large companies, and ending for those customers in that space.
Are you actually mixing the chemicals here in Illinois, or are you wholesaling the product in?
No, we have formulations, and we buy raw materials, we blend, we custom blend those materials, and then package them to spec for our customers. And we also do it under our own NYCO brands as well.
How many folks y'all employ out there?
We're a little bit under 100 people right now.
How's it going?
It's pretty busy. It's like trying to sell ice cream on the beach in the summertime. Pretty easy right now with the heightened awareness for cleaning and safety cleaning for health and disinfecting right now.
I know some people that are in these allied fields, but their problem is that the restaurants aren't buying it because the restaurants aren't open. All of your potential customers are still doing business, huh?
We are. I mean, we do business nationally as well, and so some of our customers in Illinois, of course, you know, as we've just opened up a new phase, we have outside dining and restaurants are operating at about 25% capacity. But on a national basis with other states open, we've seen some of that business come back, and, you know, it continues to come back. The pipeline was relatively full with products when COVID-19 broke, but we have seen a significant increase in the amount of disinfectant and sanitizing products, of course.
What do you say to the fact that I still can't find enough of that for, you know, just domestic use?
Well, it is a challenge. I was in a couple of big box retailers this weekend looking, and I did find some disinfectants on the shelf that are, you know, COVID approved, that have label claims that would make them safe and effective to use at home or in a business. But there are allocations. A lot of the products that we manufacture are made with raw materials called quaternary ammonium compounds, and there are basically three manufacturers of quaternary ammonium compounds in the U.S., and all of them have folks like ourselves on allocation right now. But we've been working through it, and we've been able to keep a pretty steady and significant stream. I think there's also been a lot of hoarding in the marketplace,
yeah,
which
yeah.
has eaten up a lot of the supply as well.
Allocated because they want to reserve the supplies, the raw materials for the medical industry, for the medical side?
There has been some that initially, like, for instance, in disinfecting wipes, most of the product that was manufactured was selected to go into healthcare instead of other marketplaces.
Yeah.
So that made sense.
Your
that was a good point.
Can I buy some of your stuff? I mean, give me the good stuff. If I'm still concerned about surfaces around my home, although I do think that people's interest in safeguarding themselves has shifted more from surfaces to the aeration of the disease. But is there a product that you sell that would help me de-COVID my home?
There is. We manufacture a ready-to-use product called SantaSpritz that is an EPA-registered product in all 50 states in the U.S., and that product is effective against COVID-19 when used as directed. And that's the key, is that the most important thing people can do is read the label and follow the label directions to make sure that you use the product properly. Otherwise, all you potentially can do is create cross-contamination instead of cleaning. You'll contaminate other surfaces.
I've heard that if you don't do these things properly, you just push it around. It's there, and now it's everywhere because you just wiped it around and didn't properly use the product or wait after you did. That's called SantaSpritz. Where do I buy that? Is it online or is it in stores?
SantaSpritz is available online. It's available. NYCO has some online retail that we have. We also have some big box stores that carry SantaSpritz in the hardware segment as well. So it's been in significant production and with significant demand as of lately.
We're talking to Bob Stahursky, Countryside, the chief executive officer of NYCO Products. So I guess if I go to nycoproducts.com, is that where I'll find this stuff, Bob?
Yes, you will. Yes, John, you will.
You guys working overtime over there? Are you able to keep up?
We're working hard. Our team is working very hard. We've run extended shifts. We run two extended shifts per day, and we've been working on the weekend as well, and we've got an incredible team of people that are super dedicated, and they know that that every gallon that they make is potentially helping someone stay healthy. So a fantastic team of people.
Keep up the good work, Bob. I'm telling you, I think you've just sold a couple of gallons of Santa Spritz here today, but we wish you all the best out there.
Well, thanks, John. I appreciate it.
Bob Stahursky over at NYCO Products, N-Y-C-O, NYCOproducts.com.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. Ford is expanding in Chicago. It signed a lease for a big industrial building near its southeast side assembly plant. Crane says Ford plans to use the building for pre-assembly work of components that will then be delivered to the plant on Torrance Avenue. New local startup helping homeowners lower their property taxes just raised its first round of funding. Tax Proper raised $2 million. Chicago Inno says it's built a system to easily appeal your property taxes. And while we're talking money, a Chicago data analytics startup just raised a new round of funding. Oceant has raised $15 million. They're building a database and analytics software program to help companies better understand the massive amounts of data they're collecting. That's the Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Steve Bertrand.
It's 1242 on WGN Radio. Orion Samuelson, what are you looking at?
Well, if people are looking for a quieter market, take a look at the agricultural markets. We're not seeing the kind of movement there as we are on Wall Street. At the moment, the July wheat contract is down 3.25 cents a bushel, and that puts it at 502.5 a bushel. July corn up 3.25 cents. Putting it at $3.29.5 a bushel. July soybeans are trading up 8.75 cents. That puts it at $8.66.25. And in livestock futures at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange today, the June lean hog contract is still slightly higher. It's up about 7 cents a hundredweight. The June live cattle contract is trading up 30 cents a hundredweight, and the feeder cattle contract for August is trading down 77 cents a hundredweight. But now hear this, because I've been getting so many emails. I received this yesterday afternoon. Planning for the Sandwich Fair is still underway. The fair has not been canceled at this time. Sandwich Association Fair Board will be making a final decision on the future of this year's fair, they hope, by mid-July. The board is hoping the state of Illinois health guidelines evolve regarding large events and will provide a path to allow events like the Sandwich Fair in September sometime over the next month. The board has been and will be following the state and local health guidelines for the fair and will and all rental events on the fairgrounds. If there does not appear to be a path to having the event by mid-July, that will cause the fair and all rental events to be canceled for this year. So that's the latest. The Sandwich Fair is still planned for September, but that could all change depending on what happens with the COVID-19 situation. And the other note that we make is June Dairy Month. Dairy on the farm breakfast on the dairy farms in Wisconsin. They normally hold over 60 of those on dairy farms, but they'll so far, according to John Onken, our dairy friend in Wisconsin, only one is still on the schedule. So you'll have to wait till next year to go to a dairy farm, although I'm sure a dairy farmer would like to show off what he's got, but because of the COVID-19 situation, probably won't happen. And we'll try to keep you posted on the county fair and state fair cancellations. One other event, the Illinois FFA Association holding its annual convention in Springfield, but not in front of a room full of blue jacketed FFA members. They're doing it virtually, and they're winding up today with the officer election, and we'll try to summarize what they have done this week, because this is the first ever virtual state convention the Illinois FFA has held.
So. We were singing their praises earlier on the show and talking about how adaptable that organization has been over the years, and there's more evidence of that. The Sandwich County Fair, Orion, isn't that like the oldest or largest county fair in America?
Well, it's certainly in America, yeah, it would be close because of the attendance they get and because of their proximity to Chicago. They have a large city audience that looks forward to the Sandwich Fair
That's
every year. I'm one of them. We're going to wait to see, but they'll wait until they get final guidelines from the state on the health when you put a lot of people together, because they do attract a lot of people. It comes right after the Labor Day weekend in September, so let's hope things have cleared up a little bit by then.
Orion, I was a junior broadcaster at WSPY in Plano, Illinois. I lived in Sandwich, and my first job was there, and one of my responsibilities was to do play-by-play of the tractor pull.
Right.
And there's not a lot to play by when you're doing play-by-play of a tractor pull, but it really is a great fair. It really is well done.
Yeah, and the thing I love about it is its setting, because it's loaded with shade trees, and it's like an 1800 county fair would be that I could imagine. So, yeah, we'll keep people posted on that, because I'm getting a lot of emails already saying, what about the Sandwich Fair?
Thanks, Joel. That's Orion Samuelson. We'll keep you posted on that. You know Orion is paying attention to it. Amy Guth is paying attention to a number of businesses, including what's up with Grubhub and how you get your food next. 12:51, the Wintrust Business Lunch. Maybe not as much time as we normally have. A press conference from the city about police accountability coming your way at 1 o'clock. Amy Guth watches the business scene for us on WGN. Amy, I could have told you this. We are all sleeping worse due to COVID-19, study shows.
I know. That was one of those stories. It was like, and the sky is blue and water is wet. But nonetheless, it's interesting, though, because there's a nuance to it that I thought was really fascinating about the study. In fact, once more people were working from home, our sleep duration improved because it allowed us to kind of reset to our own biological rhythm. If you're a night owl or a morning person, you probably had a little more leeway to do that because you didn't have to necessarily punch a clock or be at your desk at a certain time.
Right.
So in one hand, it benefited us, but the social impact of that, and that is the stress, the anxiety, the uncertainty that in the study is referred to as social jet lag, which, you know, maybe like a social hangover kind of feeling where you're just kind of inundated with a lot of information. A lot of it's very scary or stressful. That part is the thing that's really messing with our sleep cycle. So we're sleeping maybe a little bit more, but we're not getting as deep or as quality of sleep as perhaps we were pre-COVID. But again, the sky is blue, water is wet. We could have probably guessed that one.
I'm happy to hear that other people, though, are reporting on what a lot of us individually are experiencing. And I've also heard this kind of information tagged to the dreams which we have, which seem to be more vivid. And on one of our shows, it might have been Bob Surratt's show, the analyst said, you're not dreaming more vividly, but you're waking up so much you're having better recalls of the dreams, which are always fairly vivid. But doesn't it seem like your dreams are like off the chain these days?
Absolutely. And I'm a really vivid dreamer anyway. And sometimes I'm like, wake up from these long, complicated dreams. But yeah, lately I'm like, whoa, the last couple of months, they've been exhausting. I need a nap once I wake up.
Yeah, I hate that. You wake up and go, that wasn't any fun. Grubhub is going to be sold, and maybe the economy is always now going to embrace food delivery. This is a very profitable arena, isn't it?
Yeah, this is a really big story. There was speculation that this was going to happen, but it became official yesterday. And so Grubhub has been acquired by a company called Just Eat Takeout, cute name, but that company itself is the result of a merger of Takeout.com and Just Eat. And that was a nearly $8 billion merger about a year-ish ago, something like that. So they're going to be based in Amsterdam. That's going to be the global headquarters. And then the North American headquarters will be right here in Chicago. So it's really good news for Chicago because we've already got that big Grubhub workforce here, several thousand people already. It's really just going to strengthen that. It is an interesting moment, though, to kind of step back and say, what is the bigger picture here with food delivery? Have we really changed that significantly in such a short period of time? The bet on this was yes. leading up to this, there was a lot of speculation that Uber was going to be the person to acquire them, or the company to acquire them. And what it really came down to, there was a lot of antitrust issues. There was a lot of questions. There was and the word on the street, anyway, is that the Uber deal was a little bit less money. It was about $5 less per share, according to sources familiar with it. So this is who went out, and Just Eat Takeaway. Interestingly, the CEO of Just Eat Takeaway started around the same time as Matt Maloney started Grubhub. You know, both very young, early career moves that did this. The CEO, Jitz Gruen, in Amsterdam, he was in his dorm. So it's almost like the Zuckerberg kind of story when he started that. So I think they regard each other as peers, very optimistic statements from them both going in here. But it's a, you know, over $7 billion acquisition. That's really, really huge. It's an all-stock deal. And, of course, that's still got to be voted in by shareholders and all that. But it's essentially official as of this week.
What can you tell me about this Southeast Side factory? It seems like anybody that owns commercial real estate's taking it on the chin these days. What's going on with this Ford plant?
Yeah, Ford Motor Company has signed a lease to expand. They have a plant there. It's really close to their South Torrance Avenue plant, about a mile and a half away. This is going to be a facility doing pre-assembly work is what they're describing it. And this is part of North Point Development, which already said they're pledging $164 million to develop this area that used to be the Republic Steel Factory for kind of a landmark there. And so this is a 359,000-square-foot building. So this is a really kind of a double down for Ford, which they said they would do. They said, we will invest in Chicago, and here they are doing it. Of course, you know, they were closed down, as many automakers were, for a couple of months, reopened, and here locally shut down again 2 days later after a couple of workers were testing positive for coronavirus. So they're back up online. They feel it's going to be just a matter of weeks, not months, for them to get everything back online and moving forward. But a lot of investment from Ford on the Southeast Side.
It's good to hear. Good to hear you, too. We're going to run now, Amy. We've got that press conference coming up. Let's talk again soon.
Thanks, John.